John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. And up next, we have Non-Human Radio. Good evening and welcome to show 2004, the January 22nd, 2020 episode of Non-Human Radio, a roundup of current news on animal issues focusing on animal agriculture, animal rights, and veganism. I'm your host, Jeannie Trezino, and I'm here every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. on KZFR 90.1 FM in Chico. You can listen to streaming and archive shows at kzfr.org. On today's show, we'll be covering a few news stories, leading with a story on a proposal from Governor Gavin Newsom to make California a no-kill state. That's no-kill for shelter animals. Followed by a piece on poverty and pets from the Center for American Progress. Followed by some news that Ben & Jerry's ice cream has dropped its Happy Cow advertising claims. We'll end with a piece on how to veganize recipes with some simple cooking substitutes. And, of course, with the Chico Vegan Calendar of Events. Our first news piece is news from the governor's office on a proposal to make California a kinder place for shelter animals, making good on a 20-year-old pledge to the companion animals of the state of California. The article from KQED starts, Governor Gavin Newsom wants to make California a no-kill state for shelter animals. And experts say a new budget proposal has the teeth to save the thousands of animals euthanized in the state every year. Dr. Kate Hurley, director of the Corette Shelter Medicine Program at UC Davis, told KQED that, quote, California has had a policy for 20 years that it's the preference of the state that no healthy, treatable animal be euthanized. So that part is not new. But what is new and just incredible is the governor investing state funds to make that a reality. The Corette program has been working on animal welfare issues for almost two decades. In presenting his new state budget proposal last Friday, Newsom said he wants a one-time $50 million general fund allocation to help Corette develop a grant program for animal shelters statewide. Hurley said an estimated 100,000 animals are euthanized each year in California, but she said since the state committed to becoming no-kill, there has been a considerable drop in euthanasia. In 1998, it was estimated that more than 500,000 animals were euthanized. If the budget item is approved, the intent is for the Corette program to work with local shelters over the next 5 years to provide needed spay and neuter services. The program would also support pet owners struggling to care for their animals and help ensure that facilities that serve animals are safe and physically sound, among other efforts. Hurley pointed out that, as in so many other aspects of life in California, the euthanization issue reflects resource gaps across the state, saying that, quote, what underpins euthanasia at shelters is when people and communities are struggling to take care of their animals and to take care of themselves and each other. And so that's what's made it so difficult, is that in the very communities where the need is greatest, there's also the fewest resources, end quote. In 2012, Los Angeles committed to becoming a no-kill city, and in 2017, Mayor Eric Garcetti announced that the city had reached its goal of 90% of cats and dogs that entered shelters, leaving them alive. Hurley said that this proposal shows that Newsom is ready to extend his commitment to the idea of a California for all, to pets as well as humans, saying that, quote, I think it really matters how we treat the animals that have the least in the communities, that have the least in the state that has so much, end quote. That was an article titled, Newsom Proposes $50 Million to Make California a No-Kill State for Shelter Animals by Mary Franklin Harvin, published on January 13, 2020 on kqed.org. You're listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by yours truly, Jeannie Trezino. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. Our second news piece is an article titled Poverty Forces People to Surrender Their Pets from the Center for American Progress, published back in February 2019. The article starts out, there are all kinds of stereotypes about the people who give up their pet to a shelter. They got tired of the dog after it wasn't a cute puppy anymore, or couldn't be bothered to cut the cat's nails so it wouldn't scratch the furniture, or they needed a new designer mix to match their handbag. The reality is quite different. Quote, Matthew Birchiker, president and CEO of the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, says 40 plus million Americans live in poverty. They have pets, and they love their pets. Given the American average of 1.8 animals per household, Birchiker estimated that over 25 million cats and dogs are living in poverty, and he noted that 52% of the clients of the ASPCA Animal Hospital in New York City are living on less than $15,000 a year. Quote, we see people often who are in their darkest day, end quote, said Lori Wise of Downtown Dog Rescue in Los Angeles, which is dedicated to helping people keep their pets. They're facing some other crisis, and they happen to own a dog. Wise's organization finds many people are at the shelter because they've run out of options, often because they've run out of money, and they aren't aware of resources to help. In one ASPCA study, 40% of low-income pet owners surrendering an animal to a shelter said that they would have kept their pet if they'd had access to affordable vet care, and 30% said that the same if they could have gotten free or low-cost pet food. There's a growing awareness that meeting the needs of low-income pet owners is central to the mission of animal rescue. Quote, everywhere I go, we are either involved in or are talking to people about safety net services, said Birchiker of the ASPCA. He went on to say, it's almost as if a few years back a massive light bulb went off in the animal welfare community, and we stopped thinking about how to get animals out of shelters, and we started thinking about how to keep animals from coming into shelters, end quote. Now, that's really a light bulb moment, don't you think? That part of the shelter, animal shelter's mission is to help the community, help themselves, and help their pets from entering that shelter. The article goes on to say, some programs have, in fact, been working to keep pets together with low-income owners for a while, and the people running them have learned some important lessons about what it takes. Downtown Dog Rescue, founded in 1996, has helped keep some 12,000 pets from being surrendered to shelters in South Los Angeles since 2013. They don't have fancy facilities, just a card table and two chairs outside the shelters they partner with, where they start a conversation with people who may be in a panic. Wise goes on to say, and is quoted, they're crying, bawling, shaking, maybe they have a citation, they're scared. I say to them, Wise says to them, if I told you I could help you, would you want to get rid of your pet today? And they often say, oh, no, I love my pet. Once they have established that someone would rather keep their pet, the counselors start to connect people to resources. They're basically pet social workers, such as a volunteer handyman that will patch a fence or someone who's been cited for their dog running loose, low-cost training advice, and crucially, options for lower-cost vet care. In Los Angeles, there are free spay and neuter services for low-income pet owners, as well as vets who provide a discount on services to people working with Downtown Dog Rescue. The numbers needed to help someone keep a pet aren't often huge. Wise said it generally costs them less than $100. One challenge is often persuading vets to volunteer time and offer discounts. Wise says a lot of them, the vets, have tremendous amounts of student loans, and the young ones are really struggling. The young vets are really struggling. Wise has found it's crucial to make it easy for vets to help. They work with three main animal hospitals, so no one vet is bombarded with cases. They make sure billing is free of complications. Clients show up with a written voucher stating what Downtown Dog Rescue is paying for, and there's one point of contact for billing the organization. For their monthly free clinics, they handle all the organizational details, tables, chairs, event permits, outreach flyers. Quote, the vets just show up, do the work, and leave, she said. Quote, we stay in our own lanes. We don't give medical advice. They don't do planning and outreach. And it's a beautiful relationship. As a national complement to the kind of work Wise is doing, the ASPCA is researching ways to lower the cost of vet care without diminishing the quality. How do we shorten diagnostic and treatment protocols? Asked Birchiger. If the vet can diagnose more quickly with fewer tests, it's cheaper. And if it's cheaper, it's more accessible. He pointed to a previous success, a technical advance in performing spay-neuter surgeries called the pedicle, tie that has allowed vets to complete the procedure in a shorter time. Taking a broader view, Birchiger of the ASPCA also thinks that the field needs to take a cue from the legal world, which has a discipline of community-based lawyers, and they find a way to make that possible for vets. Quote, we need to create an economy around being a community veterinarian, he said. There's a desire for vets to give back to their communities. We need to make it economically viable for them. Making basic procedures more efficient is one way of doing this. More loan repayment programs for vets practicing in underserved areas like the Veterinary Medicine Loan Repayment Program are another possibility. It's critical that services be geographically accessible and that people are aware of them. One way to address those issues and be more efficient in general is to make use of existing institutions that already reach low-income people. One example is the ASPCA's partnership with the Food Bank for New York City to supply pet food, which in its first year had distributed nearly 100,000 pounds of dog and cat food to 254 food pantries. Now, I know we've talked about food pantries on the show occasionally. I don't know whether any of our local food pantries accept pet food, but it would be an interesting way for our local humane societies and animal shelters to reach out and take advantage of the donations of the more well-off community, for the community that's able to spare a few dollars or spare a bag of groceries every couple months. Birchiger went on to say, rather than recreate the distribution system that they have perfected over time, we simply add pet food to that. They're happy about it because they want to serve the entire family, and we're happy about it because the animals are getting fed, end quote. What's more, ASPCA puts stickers on the bags of food that inform clients about other services. So now, if they need low-cost vet care, they know where to go. Birchiger said that the animal welfare world needs to think creatively about partnerships like this with other systems such as child protective services, domestic violence services, and law enforcement. Quote, you don't need to rebuild that infrastructure. It exists, he said. You need to attach yourself to what is already there. And there was an article titled Poverty Forces People to Surrender Their Pets, published on February 4th on the TalkPoverty.org website. And that is a website by the group Center for American Progress, which isn't necessarily an animal welfare or animal rights related group. It's about basic welfare and basic needs faced by people in poverty. So I'm really heartened to see them taking on this type of topic. Links to these articles and the show notes are posted to Non-Human Radio and to the KZFR.org program page for Non-Human Radio. Our next news piece is from Veg News, reporting on the Ben & Jerry's ice cream company's so-called Dairy Cares program. The article begins, Vermont-based ice cream company Ben & Jerry's will no longer use the marketing claim that its milk comes from happy cows. In 2018, the nonprofit advocacy group Organic Consumers Association, the OCA, filed a lawsuit against the ice cream company for misrepresenting that it sourced its dairy from humane suppliers through its Caring Dairy program, after discovering that some of Ben & Jerry's ingredients are sourced from factory farms, with a portion testing positive for the biocide glyphosate, or Roundup. So this group, Organic Consumers Association, is not a vegan or vegetarian animal rights group. It's not an animal welfare group. It's mostly concerned with organic products. And I think what tripped them up on this or ticked them off was that Roundup was found as trace ingredients on some of these cows of this supposedly organic supply chain. Going on, the article says, in October 2019, a similar class action lawsuit was filed by James Ehlers in Vermont. Doesn't say what organization James Ehlers is associated with. This month, in January, Ben & Jerry's filed a motion to dismiss the Organic Consumers Association lawsuit, which was denied by the District of Columbia Superior Court, in which the ice cream company revealed that it would remove its Happy Cow claims from packaging and advertising. OCA International Director Ronnie Cummins said in a press release that, quote, The removal of misleading Happy Cow claims is a victory for consumers and an indication that Ben & Jerry's can't back up those claims in court. But this is just one small step toward more honest representation of the Ben & Jerry's brand. OCA will continue through our own ongoing litigation against Ben & Jerry's and its parent company, Unilever, to push for Ben & Jerry's to either live up to its remaining marketing claims or to remove all claims that have no basis in fact, end quote. In 2016, Ben & Jerry's debuted its first four vegan ice cream flavors and has since expanded the line to include 12 almond milk-based pints, including its newest flavor, dairy-free Netflix and Chilled, a line that does not source ingredients from cows of any disposition, happy or otherwise. That was an article titled Ben & Jerry's Drops Happy Cow's Claim After Deceptive Labeling Lawsuit, published on January 21st, 2020 by Anna Starutsnaskaya on the Veg News website. And of course, you can avoid all issues of dairy cow mistreatment and suffering calves being separated from their moms and cows subjected to daily milking or twice daily milking by just not even partaking of cow milk dairy, because cow milk is for baby cows, not for humans. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. And if there's any, you can reach me through that page, through the message feature, if there's any issues that you would like to see me cover or discuss. We're going to end the news segment with some vegan cooking tips to help you navigate a transition to a vegan diet. This is a little tips article entitled, How to Make Any Recipe Vegan from where? From Forbes magazine. Forbes magazine, a business capitalist magazine, is interested in helping its readers go vegan. Get ready to take notes and hopefully get busy in the kitchen. The article begins, plant-based everything is on the rise, but if you're new to a meat-free or vegan lifestyle, adjusting can be difficult. Sure, there are plenty of alternatives to animal-based products at health food stores, but hanging on to your favorite not-vegan recipe can create a challenge. Luckily, tried-and-true vegan chefs shared their easiest tips for how to make any recipe vegan with easy swaps and ingredient hacks that may just make that non-vegan recipe even tastier. The most important part of making recipes vegan-friendly is to find ingredients that are comparable in texture and flavor, says Anna Ryder, recipe developer and chef at GarlicDelight.com. For example, if you're getting rid of animal-based fat like butter and cream, add coconut cream, olive oil, and other fats back so the flavor is balanced, she says. If you're removing the texture of meat or animal-based foods, such as the texture of whipped cream or the mouthfeel of meat, make sure you're substituting with tofu, whipped coconut cream, or mushrooms to provide a similar texture that your brain expects. Here are some common non-vegan ingredients and easy swaps to use plant-based alternatives. Vegetarian food blogger Sapana Chandra, an author of the vegan cookbook Plant Power Bowls, recommends using a flax egg instead of raw egg in a recipe. To do that, you mix 1 tablespoon of ground flaxseed meal with 3 tablespoons of water and let that sit for a few minutes before using. You can do the same thing with chia. Mix 1 tablespoon of ground chia seeds with 3 tablespoons of water, soak it for a few minutes, and you can use that as an egg substitute in a lot of recipes. For baking, Ryder also recommends substituting silken tofu for eggs. Replace each egg with about 1/4 cup pureed silken tofu. The baked goods will not brown as much, but they will be moist, Ryder says. If you want a browner color, you can replace some of the white sugar in the recipe with brown sugar. You can also replace an egg with 1/4 cup of mashed bananas. For scrambled eggs, substitute regular tofu, the kind that comes in water in a plastic tub. If possible, press the tofu to remove the water, then crumble the tofu into a frying pan and fry it over medium heat to cook off excess moisture. Once the tofu is cooked, you can create a veggie scramble with ingredients like chopped bell peppers, zucchinis, and mushrooms. For an eggier taste and smell, the special salt known as kala namak, or black salt, has a high sulfur content and will make the tofu smell and taste like an egg yolk. So that's your basic tofu scramble. You can get that at a couple of places in town. I have a restaurant guide at chicovegan.com that lists a couple of places that serve a pretty decent tofu scramble, which really a scrambled tofu is very, very similar to a scrambled egg texture. For egg whites, pastry chef Danielle Morelli of Trevelli at the Langham Restaurant in Chicago will use aquafaba, the water from a can of drained from a can of chickpeas. Aquafaba can be used in many ways for baked goods. It's a great substitute for egg whites because it whips up just like egg whites do and can be used to make meringues, macaroon, and light and airy sponge cakes. And that is really amazing. So if you've been draining your chickpea water down the drain when you're making like a three bean salad or something, save that. Google aquafaba and you will find that you can take a electric mixer and whip that up, and it will froth up and form stiff peaks just like egg whites do. It's pretty amazing. If you're cooking, Ryder recommends replacing butter with vegetable oils, such as canola oil, peanut oil, or coconut oil, particularly if the butter is used for frying or for preventing food sticking to the pan. If butter is called for a flavoring, like in salads or soups, substitute butter with olive oil and tahini, which add richness. On sandwiches, you can, of course, substitute spreadable butter with nut butters like peanut butter, almond butter, and sunflower butter. And going on for heavy cream. While alternative milk options and varieties ranging from nut to oats are commonplace, plant-based heavy whipping cream can be more daunting. For whipped cream on drinks, Ryder suggests whipping coconut cream as a vegan substitute. Make sure to buy coconut cream and not coconut milk, as only coconut cream will have enough fat to whip up. Alternatively, you can take the fat part of a regular can of coconut milk, especially if you refrigerate it, and you can scoop out the fatty part and add some sugar and whip that up, and that will turn into a nice cream topping. And as an aside, the commercial brand Silk recently released Silk Heavy Cream, which can be used as a direct substitute in sauces and desserts that call for heavy cream. The Silk Heavy Cream will also whip up, but does not have quite the same consistency as dairy whipped cream. It is coconut-based, it does not taste like coconut, and it has just a very neutral taste. Some folks have even been finding that it replaces their long-lost half-and-half, dairy half-and-half in their beloved morning coffee. And for savory dishes, the article goes on, you can skip the dairy altogether for more flavorful alternatives. For instance, you can puree caramelized onions and roasted cauliflower to produce a creamy and full-flavored vegan cream that you can add to soups, mac and cheese, and other casserole dishes. So those are some suggestions there. Going on for the meat substitutes. For chicken, consider extra firm tofu. It's a perfect substitute for meat because it provides high protein content and a dense texture that makes you feel satisfied as you chew, Ryder says. Press and marinate your extra firm tofu to optimize flavor, and then grill, bake, saute, or fry it. Pre-marinated and flavored tofus are also sold at supermarkets and can be cooked with the same ease as chicken breasts. So I just want to say that's a really important point. Something like tofu with its high protein content and dense texture makes for a satisfying meal, just like a animal protein-based entree does. Restaurants that do not provide protein-heavy entrees of this type of texture are not taking advantage of what vegans or flexitarians, people who are looking to reduce their animal consumption, need and are looking for to be satisfied at a restaurant. If you're just providing roasted vegetables, that may be great, but please, you got to consider adding in some protein. And that is one big missing area in a lot of lot of restaurants in the Chico area. And it makes some of our vegetarian and vegan-friendly restaurants, the ones that stand out are the ones that are providing this type of really robust, well-flavored, protein-based entree and not just making do with roasted local vegetables as their selection for entree. Same thing with, like, if it's a rice-based dish, main dish, like a risotto or something. That's great to have a mushroom risotto, but that is in no way a substitute for an entree. No way. So, this article goes on to say, for red meat, focus on the taste that may be lacking. Meat brings a lot of umami flavors to a dish because it is packed with glutamates and glutamic acid. Writer says, you can find umami-rich, plant-based foods that provide the same savory and delicious flavors that keep you eating more. Umami-rich vegan ingredients include ripe tomatoes, tomato paste, ketchup, miso paste, soy sauce, yeast extracts such as Marmite, Vegemite, and nutritional yeast, shiitake mushrooms, and seaweed and rice vinegar. As a quick vegan ground beef substitute, chef and recipe developer Rachel Barfield uses roasted mushrooms blended with nuts, seeds, and beans, which also have protein. It's the spices that drive the flavor with sausages and ground beef, so get creative with spice blends. Smoked paprika, ground cumin, curries, harissa, and piri piri flavors are fun to work with. Brown or green lentils also work as ground beef in most recipes. And to round it out, for the beloved bacon, Avon loves to use toasted coconut flakes, which can be made in about 5 minutes. You toss the coconut flakes with black pepper, smoked paprika, garlic powder, and soy sauce, and toast that all in a skillet on medium heat until dark brown, but not getting burnt. And that can be a great substitute for bacon, especially in a salad or something like that. So those were some vegan cooking tips and tricks from the article titled How to Make Any Recipe Vegan by Melissa Kravitz-Hofner from Forbes.com on January 9th, 2020. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by yours truly, Jeannie Trezino. I have an update on the wildfires in Australia. After more than 3 weeks of active firefighting, the bushfire that ravaged Kangaroo Island has been declared contained. Hundreds of firefighters worked tirelessly to battle the deadly blaze that has ripped through more than a third of that island. The South Australian country Fire Service announced yesterday that the fire has been contained, meaning the forward rate of spread has been halted and no flare-ups have occurred outside the fire edge for a number of days. Firefighters will remain active over the coming days to ensure that the fire does not break containment as gusty, windier weather approaches. Aircraft will continue to operate on the island in the days to come should an outbreak occur. And that was an update posted by Channel 7 News on Australia from Monday, January 20th, 2020. That is good news to hear. In the meanwhile, if you would like to support wildlife rescues in Australia to help with the bushfires, I'm going to just share a couple that I've shared before. WIRES Wildlife Rehab in Australia at wires.org.au is a 30-year-old organization, and they are in full force actively rescuing and rehabilitating animals from the bushfires. Another group is Koalas in Care at koalasincare.org.au, also in New South Wales. And they are helping out koalas, of course, and other marsupials that have been injured or burned in the fires. And one other group is the South Australian Veterinary Emergency Management Team. It's a Tier 2 response and recovery agency similar to North Valley Animal Disaster Group. That group has been critical in helping wildlife on South Australia's Kangaroo Island, which is a haven for rare wildlife. And you can find them at SAVEM, that's S-A-V-E-M, for South Australian Veterinary Emergency Management, savem.org.au. All right, we have a couple events coming up for our Chico Vegan calendar of events. Coming up tomorrow, activists from the local chapter of Anonymous for the Voiceless will be convening a Cube of Truth at Chico State tomorrow, January 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For more information, please check out the Facebook group for the Chico chapter of Anonymous for the Voiceless, coordinated by local activist Jackson Moore, who's been a guest on the show. Coming up also on February 1st, the Sacktown Veg Fest. The fifth annual Sacktown Veg Fest is being held on Saturday, February 1st, 2020, at the McClellan Conference Center in Sacramento. It will be a celebration of vegan, plant-based living featuring vendors, cooking demos, and speakers organized by the Sacramento Vegetarian Society, which is really a vegan society. For more information and advance tickets, go to their website at sacktownvegfest.org. All right. This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, its underwriters, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist Rockers Rise Against. Thank you for listening. If you're interested in being a kinder, more compassionate person in 2020, I encourage you to go to 10weekstovegan.com and get started. There's no time like the present. Have a good day, everyone. See you next week.